Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio on Green 960, KKGN, every Saturday at 5 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to The Joan Kenley Show, bringing you Conversation Radio, a program where talking really matters. I'm so excited that we'll be talking today about poetry power, a power that can take us from the ridiculous to the sublime, from laughter to tears to healing. Poetry has the power to evoke emotional and profound responses within our souls. And according to Samuel Taylor Coleridge, poetry is the blossom and fragrancy of all human knowledge. We'll be exploring the blossoms and fragrancy of poetry with poets Barbara Lyon and Drew Dellinger, who will share their work, life adventures, and artistic expressions with us. We'll be talking about poetry and politics, romance, activism, deep feelings, and self-expression, even the dark side of the soul. First, I'd like to tell you about Drew. He's a poet, teacher, activist, and the founder of Poets for Global Justice. He's spoken and performed at events across the United States and the UK, speaking on justice, cosmology, ecology, and democracy. His published poetry collection is Love Letter to the Milky Way, and it has inspired readers on four continents. Drew has been cited as a national treasure by Joanna Macy, and Alice Walker has said that he is a deep and courageous poet, and we know that is true. And we're also thrilled to have Barbara Lyon joining us. She has been writing poetry for more than a quarter of a century. She was born in Chicago, raised in New York, and moved to San Francisco, and raised five children with her husband of 63 years. At 87 years young, she is still painting, teaching yoga, and practicing Tai Chi in the park on Saturday mornings. It's interesting to note that Barbara received her master's in human values at the San Francisco Theological Seminary when she was 60 years old. Her book of selected poems is titled Memories and Mysteries. So welcome to you both. I'm so glad to have you here. And Drew, let's start off with you. What life experience compelled you to start writing the poetry that you write today? Was there an evolution and an inspiration that struck you all at once, or did it sort of creep up on you?
I think it was a gradual evolution. I was always interested in language, and I loved stand-up comedians, and I loved music and really listening to the lyrics of songs, and I loved cleverness and wordplay. And then when I was in high school and college was when rap was really big, the so-called golden age of hip-hop. And I got really turned on to the wordplay and the creativity and the power of some of the rap songs that were out at that time. And they were really educational and political and really telling a lot of truths.
And a lot of wittiness in these and a lot of ingenuity, particularly because a lot of rap sort of was spontaneous on the spot and became lyrics that were written down and then recorded and sold by the millions. So
That's right. There's a tradition of improvisation in rap that's very similar to jazz, and they call that freestyle rapping.
Exactly. Do you do any freestyle rapping?
I do occasionally, but I have to be in the right mood.
I know how that goes. Well, Barbara, tell us what compelled you to come to the field of poetry and the wisdom of words.
I think all of the arts have just been so supportive for me. I grew up in a family that art was honored. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was an artist. My mother painted.
And you paint as well.
I paint. And all my sisters are artists. So it was acceptable, and I went for painting. But then I found out when I was in my later years and needed to find some way of working, because my husband went into the ministry late in life, and I had four teenagers.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, I think I'll better go to work. But I didn't want to work at something I had to hate. So I went for dance, finally, after sort of struggling with all the fields that were possible, and I became a dance therapist. I think all of the arts are so connected.
I like to call it poetry in action.
I was thinking that coming up on BART, that it is. That's what it is. It's just a slightly different way of, it's the opening, it's the vibrancy, it's the part of us that doesn't always come out, you know, but needs to, is always wanting to, is sitting there, you know, saying,
come on,
jump in.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so I think I went to poetry mostly because I took care of my husband. He had a stroke, and it took 5 years for him to, you know, make his way toward the end.
So, Barbara, how old were you then when you started taking care of your husband and getting into the idea of poetry?
80.
You were 80 years old. And I've had 27-year-old clients say to me, gosh, what am I going to do with my life? I'm so old already. This is such an inspiration. I had an 83-year-old voice teacher in New York when I was acting who started doing commercials on television when she was 83. And I mean, she was such an inspiration, but it's never too late. It's never too late.
I laugh at people who say that, you know, 23 or 43 or 62. I say, oh, come on.
Exactly. Come on. So that's great. So your book of poems, as we said, is called Memories and Mysteries, but you also did the artwork for the cover and did the sketches that are inside as well. So that's sort of, again, adding your whole picture to the picture.
I enjoyed that.
Yes. So, Drew, you're really popular on many continents. And so what took you from point A, being interested in the things you've already told us about, to actually getting published, getting in front of audiences, getting known?
Well, I started writing rap lyrics when I was in college, and I was part of a hip-hop band called Sweet Acidophilus. And
I love that.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it is.
We would perform with the musicians, and we would perform as a college band. And then when we graduated, the college band dissolved and no longer
that
had
happens.
A band anymore. Mm-hmm. So then I was kind of like a rapper without a band. And what is a rapper without a band?
I don't know.
A poet.
Okay.
Or a spoken word artist, or a spoken word poet is one of the terms that's used to
Lovely.
Designate more of a performance style of poetry that's very popular these days with the poetry slams and the open mics that are very popular. So I started performing in the Bay Area in the late 90s and working with a author and theologian named Matthew Fox.
Yes.
And I would perform at the Cosmic Mass, which was a interfaith spiritual celebration that Matthew Fox was organizing.
Yes.
And then I, you know, and I would sometimes have poems published in different magazines like Yes, a Journal of Positive
mm-hmm.
Futures, and In Context magazine, and Earthlight magazine, and these
all
sorts
of which
of things.
We know and love.
And then eventually people would come up after my performances and ask if they could get a copy of the poems that I had read. So I decided to put my poems into a collection, which I called Love Letter to the Milky Way.
A great name. And where did you get that name?
It's the title of one of my poems.
I knew that, but there must have been an inspiration behind that subject.
The deep inspiration behind it is really the work of Thomas Berry and Brian Swim, who are ecological thinkers and cosmological thinkers.
Tell me how they influenced your life, because I've read that they have, and I was interested in hearing it from you.
Sure. Well, I met Thomas Berry when I was about 20 years old, and I was very fortunate to be able to study with him. He was about 80 years old at the time. He's about 94 now. And I studied with him during the summers when I was in college, and I was completely taken with his ecological and cosmological vision. He talked about this universe as an unfolding story.
Yes, indeed.
We are all part of this immense journey of the universe. And so that just got me thinking about how, through the teachings of Thomas Berry and Brian Swim and Joanna Macy and people like that, began to realize that we are the universe embodied.
Oh, yes.
We are the earth unfolding in these different expressions. And so we are the Milky Way. And everything that we know is the Milky Way. Buddha is part of the Milky Way story. The earth and all of the species are part of the Milky Way story. So I wanted to kind of write a love letter or an ode that would recognize the interconnectedness of the universe process, the earth process, the galactic process, if you will, that we participate in.
Wonderful. And when you started writing your poems, Barbara, when your husband was ill, what were the inspirations that struck a chord in you that said, oh, this poem works today, or that poem is what I have to write about today? How did that evolve for you?
I have to interject the fact that my mentors are also Brian Swim and the whole list. And I go way back and studied with Fox.
Yeah.
You know?
Fantastic.
And I think they're all mentors.
Oh,
and they
yes.
all are the reason that you want to put certain words together and the inspiration that comes, that wells up, that makes you want to write a poem.
Hmm.
Or paint a picture or do a dance, and hopefully that will continue in our culture, because the arts that are proselytized by, if that's the right word, by money is just so sad.
Yes.
You know, you just you look at it and you think, well, that's you know, you think at first it's beautiful and it isn't, you know, somehow.
And of course, we really know that there is a fragrancy, a perfume that we can taste in our mouth, in our belly, in our body, when we are open to the poetic word, or the word that inspires, or the word that takes us into a darker part of our shadow self, so to speak, that informs us more about our humanity and who we are. And we aren't really taken to those places on a daily basis if we don't stop, reflect, read, and open the door to the poetic books that are around us and even on the internet that we can find. So we're going to say that clearly a poet is, before anything else, a person who is passionately in love with language. And Ralph Waldo Emerson put it so perfectly when he said, "The true philosopher and true poet are one, and a beauty, which is truth, and a truth, which is beauty, which is the aim of both." And what about living the poetry of life? Who's your favorite poet, audience? We'll talk about this and so much more, so do stay tuned.
You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show, right here on Green 960 AM, KKGN. What's not to love about The Joan Kenley Show, where talking truly matters, here on 960 KKGN.
Welcome back. I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to The Joan Kenley Show. We're having a conversation with poets Barbara Lyon and Drew Dellinger. Our focus today is poetry power. Historically, so many cultures have supported and given fame to male poets, as we all know. And I'm going to say I'd like to mention some of the most influential female poets that I can call to memory. There is, of course, Emily Dickinson, who is widely considered one of the greatest American poets, and Mary Oliver is an author of more than 10 volumes of poetry and prose. Her many accolades include a Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award. Dorothy Parker was an American writer and poet best known for her caustic wit, wisecracks, and sharp eye for 20th century urban foibles. I think she's the one who said about Oakland, "There's no there there." And of course, we don't agree with her anymore. But for instance, Maya Angelou, who's also a memorist, actress, and an important figure in the American Civil Rights Movement, is one of our favorites. And in 2001, she was named one of the 30 most powerful women in America. And then there's Mae Sarton's spiritual poems. So, Drew, who do you like? Who do you call to mind when we say who inspires you?
There's a lot of poets that I enjoy. When I think some of the great women poets, I think of Adrienne Rich, Sharon Olds, Denise Levertov. An ancient female poet who I think is very powerful is Mirabai, who has some great, you know, devotional, spiritual poetry. And then the other poets, besides the great women poets, I remember Richard Brautigan was somebody that I was impressed by when I was a kind of a rebellious and cynical middle school student. We had this poetry book, and the only poem in that entire book that jumped out at me was a couple by Richard Brautigan. There was one called Haiku Ambulance, and it said, "A piece of green pepper fell off the wooden salad bowl. So what?"
Isn't that good?
And he had another short one called Two Guys Get Out of a Car. It said, "Two guys get out of a car. They stand beside it. They don't know what else to do."
And the
The end. And I thought, that's a poem? That's poetry? Yes. It just brought me in touch with the playful, kind of absurd side of life. And I really enjoyed that about Richard Brautigan.
I wish I'd had more absurdity in my life growing up in the 50s. And I have to say that when someone says, "What's the first poem you ever learned?" all I can remember is, "This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks." Well, that didn't light my fire very much. And
memorizing poems was the way we related to poetry in the high school that I went to and the grade school I went to. And so I think that poetry has become more alive as communication has become more seamless. And we can actually hear people like you reciting your poems and David White, the way he speaks his language in poetry and appears in public doing poetry. And Barbara, the kind of poetry that you have speaks to our everyday life and to our spiritual life and to our growth and to our humor. And so we have so many ways to come at poetry now. And I think that lyrics of songs are poetry in and of themselves.
The Canticle to the Cosmos.
Canticle to the Cosmos.
Has really inspired me. And again, it's the environment and the spirit. And I've shown it twice so far to groups of people, and it's really changed a lot of lives.
Well, sure. And when we're talking about, again, your evolution in poetry, what created the opportunity for you to go to other countries and to get your words printed on other continents?
There were some people in England who had seen some of my poetry on some videotapes and some films that I had been on, and so they were really inspired, and they had emailed me and asked if I would come to England and consider performing. So I just went this past November, and I did a two-week poetry tour of the UK, and I was in London, and I was in the Devon area in the southwest of England, and then I was up north in the Yorkshire area.
And what was that like? I mean, it's so different the way they relate, I think, in England and in Scotland and in the Celtic countries to the spoken word into the sound of the human voice, even.
It was a different experience, but I found that there was a lot of shared camaraderie and enjoyment of the spoken word.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, they have a very strong oral tradition.
That's what I meant, yes.
From the Celtic tradition. And so I think that there was, they may not have the exact same spoken word scene that we have in the United States, but there's just an immediate knowing of the oral tradition and appreciation of the ideas and the images and the wordplay and contained in my spoken word poetry.
And so then when you had that experience there and came back here, how did it inform what you wanted to do in this country?
Well, I love performing, and I love sharing poetry, and I also love the communion that's created when people get together and enjoy art and share on that deep heart and soul level, and also put their minds together about what we can do in terms of the ecological issues we face and the social justice issues we face. So I kind of use poetry and performing and traveling around and speaking as a way of building for social transformation. And so it's a form of arts activism is part of how I perceive it.
And we're going to talk a lot about that toward the end of the hour, because I do think that Poets for Social Justice is a great name, and its time has come. And the fact that you're involved in ecology and the ecosystem of living as well is something that is very inspiring. But we're going to save that for later, because I want to ask Barbara how you then gather people around your poetry and your spoken word as you now have published your collection.
It's slow. I haven't claimed it, and I'm beginning to claim it. And as people come up to me and say, "Oh, I loved your poetry. It spoke to my life, my everyday life."
Surely, indeed.
So that's been a really lovely strokes.
Of course, it
has.
And
the people, I actually have only sent it out to family and very close friends.
Well, think of all the people that are going to
myself. So it's lovely to get a note, you know, from somebody and say, "Wow, Barbara!"
Yes, it's really good. And also think of all the people that are going to hear some of your poems in our next segment, because we're going to have both Drew and Barbara read some selected poems that they have. But I wondered if you ever read your poems out loud to friends and family before you decided what the final version was going to be. How do you craft them, or do they just come out fully born?
No, I redo and read.
Because I've learned when I'm writing books that writing is rewriting, and I didn't know if poetry was that for you.
It isn't for everyone, apparently. I've listened, but it is for me.
Well,
and I did not read it to my family until
I... Oh, you didn't?
No. I kept it to myself until I felt that it was ready, and then went ahead and made arrangements to print it myself. And then I kind of liked the whole. I didn't want to
do piecemeal.
But now, since it's been printed, I've been going to this little cafe in Niles and for open mic, and I just have had a ball.
I'll bet.
People are so good to me, and, you know, just... The respect and the community, talk about camaraderie, it's just so much fun.
I can imagine.
What a high I get every time I go.
No question about that. But I'm also curious to know if you read the words out loud to yourself or if you read them just silently to yourself in your head. How did that play out?
I did read them out loud. And I did have one friend that I write with and a little writing group at the senior center. Mm-hmm. And I was going to tell you about that because I think you'd be interested. But so I have read them aloud there, but only since the book, pretty much the book was together before I started to do it publicly at all.
But you were certainly ready because your book is offering so many complete thoughts and complete word thoughts that really inspire. And so it looks like you've been at it and publishing it for years and years. It really feels that way when you open the book and get started. So what do you find that people say to you when you've given performances, Drew, that the poetry that you've written speaks to them in what way?
I find a lot of people are deeply moved by it, and a lot of people share the same kind of sensibility that we need to be working for ecological transformation and sustainability, and we need to be working for social justice. And so they know the ideas intellectually, and they may have read authors talking about these ecological and these social justice ideas, but they often comment on the power that the spoken word has to hit people right in the heart and to hit people on the soul level, and I think that's really the power of the arts. So I've been pleased to hear that a lot of people feel like it really has that kind of power to connect on the heart level, and they feel like that's the level on which people can transform.
I think so, and you have a very wide range of subject. I mean, you talk about the universe, and you talk about romantic ideas, and you talk about metaphysical ideas, spiritual ideas, the ecology, and so you are obviously influenced by so many different forces.
Yeah, I've had a lot of amazing mentors, and I'm pursuing a doctorate at the California Institute of Integral Studies. So a lot of the kind of intellectual and academic ideas we might deal with in the classroom, I try to channel some of that into my poetry because I find it's very interesting to have some kind of intellectual, mythical, historical content, but to bring a creative twist to it with my own ideas and perspective and my own wordplay.
Now, did you mention JFK University earlier before we came into the studio?
That's right. I've also been teaching at John F. Kennedy University.
And what is your course there?
I teach a lot of different courses, mostly on ecological and social justice issues.
Because I met my husband at JFK University years ago, and we were on the leadership board to help create programs for the university, and my husband had just moved here from France. And so I have a great fondness in my heart for JFK University in Orinda, and that was sort of a fateful, poetic moment when I said, as I drove up with a friend, I'm going to meet my husband here. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened.
Wow, so, that's a great story.
Amazing stuff. Yes, indeed. So anyway, next we're going to talk about how words influence our actions, our thoughts, our self-expression. How do political candidates use or misuse words when they're campaigning for our vote? We're going to have our studio poetry slam, and we want you to keep listening because we'll keep talking.
The Joan Kenley Show, talk radio your way on 960 KKGN. Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level on Green 960 AM, KKGN.
I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with The Joan Kenley Show. We're so glad to have two wonderful poets with us today, Barbara Lyon and Drew Dellinger. And we're talking about poetry power, one of humanity's most influential art forms. But we can't leave out the power of words in prose, used by leaders, speakers, and politicians. The power to persuade the multitudes with rhetoric, vocal sound, rhythm, and rhyme. It has been the magic of language since language began. But what in us is swayed by the right words at the right time? Well, I remember a few years ago, I was having lunch with Justine Thoms, friend and co-founder of New Dimensions Radio. And all of a sudden, here we were in this lunchroom, and she decided at the table to recite this poignant Rumi poem to me. There is some kiss we want our whole lives, the touch of spirit on the body. Seawater begs the pearl to break its shell, and the lily, how passionately it needs some wild darling. At night I open the window and ask the moon to come in and press its face into mine, breathe into me, close the language door, and open the love window. The moon won't use the door, only the window. Well, to have a friend wax poetic was so great. Nobody had ever done that in public to me personally, one-on-one, and it also invited me into Rumi's universe. And then I discovered Colin Barks had recorded readings of Rumi poems, and I found them so incredibly moving. His English interpretations of this poetry have sold over 500,000 copies worldwide, which brings me to your poem, Drew, about Rumi. I know our audience would love for you to share a bit of this with them, and in fact, right now, we're going to start our own poetry slam with Drew and Barbara sharing more of their poetic words with us as we continue. So, Drew, take it away.
Rumi, the first whirling saint of poetry, spinning like a galaxy, weaving constellations of words like blazing stars, numinous moons, planets with gardens blossoming, and oceans floating in space. Rumi, the first whirling saint of poetry, traversing the geography of divine desire with longing stronger than the undertow of history. This presence is mysterious, like the silhouette of music, the circumference of a dream.
The circumference of a dream. Oh, I love to imagine that in my mind. Well, lovely, lovely, lovely. So, Barbara, I think you have now ready for us your poem called My Bliss.
Rhythm is tapped. Who can resist? Step out and whirl. Gotta be me. Swing, rock, and wave. Unstoppable joy. Who will he choose? Gotta be me. I fly for this dance. Nothing will hold me. This is such bliss. Gotta be me. With such a partner, I can die happy. Dance up to heaven. It's gotta be me.
Well, this is so unexpected to have harmonica and poetry together, and that was so much fun. Thank you so much for that. My Bliss from Barbara. And then now we're going to have from Drew a bit of Hymn to the Sacred Body of the Universe.
Let's meet at the confluence where you flow into me and one breath swirls between our lungs. Let's meet at the confluence where you flow into me and one breath swirls between our lungs. For one instant to dwell in the presence of the galaxies. For one instant to live in the truth of the heart. The poet says this entire traveling cosmos is the secret one, slowly growing a body.
And from slowly growing a body, we're going to go to encounters from Barbara.
Waves roll, collect, swell, froth, crash, glide. Two stars streak, collide, explode as star, new stars rise. Our words touch, reform, wound, heal, soar. Two cells meet, meld, form, divide, make love.
Make love. Well, from making love, we'll go to Drew and angels and ancestors.
I write words to catch up to the ancestors. An angel told me the only way to walk through fire without getting burned is to become fire. Some days angels whisper in my ear as I walk down the street, and I fall in love with every person I meet. And I think maybe this could be a bliss, like when Dante met Beatrice. Other days, all I see is my collusion with illusion.
Well, I think we all have had collusion with illusion more times than we would like to admit. And so a lot of times poetry brings us back to our own foibles about ourselves, that we aren't necessarily telling the truth all the time to who we are, what we're doing, and what we want. And so I'm very curious now to hear from Barbara her poem called Ah, Fog.
Dense fog obscures in the mist-bound landscape, outworn events, old differences gone. Mythic dreams take shape, illuminate sacred form, life fog in the mythic bond reborn. In seclusion, evolution of self, now made visible, always there, but in need of a mystical moment to emerge.
Well, mystical moments are one of my favorite moments in life. And when I read your next poem, Drew, it felt mystical and romantic all at the same time. And the title of this one is She Radiant?
Is she radiant? She's the sun's little sister. Her skin, smoother than the lily in Georgia O'Keeffe's mind. Her lips curve around a word like justice. Damn, if I knew her better, I would tell her, you are goddess of the night sky, cloaked in humility, sweet as the knowledge of death. You are beautiful, sacred involution, the divine folded into your thought, breath, emotions.
Thought, breath, emotions. And when we think of a lot of the things we like to do in life, sometimes commitment is something people fear, desire, want, or yearn for, and that's the title of Barbara's next poem, Commit.
In this dark time, draw in. Listen, the heart speaks. Rise up, be not captive to power that does not know how to play. People, turn your glory on, reveal your armful of flowers.
Turn your glory on. Now, what inspired you to write those words and those lines? I'm so interested to know, because Commit is the name of that poem, and you must have been sort of fired up when you wrote that.
So much negativity is coming into our culture.
Yes.
It's heartbreaking to me. I read the paper and I have to breathe it out.
We have to breathe it out.
Breathe it out.
Yes, we do.
And so I wanted to re-enter into the place of joy.
Well, isn't that a grand idea? Re-enter the place of joy. And I think that I was talking to my son the other day about his life choices right now in time. And one of the phrases I always come back to when he's in question about something is follow your joy. Because it's so hard to decide, is this my path? Is that my path? And you take all the hard considerations into your heart and say, well, if I do this, the road not taken is not going to be the road taken. And there are lots to balance when you're 30 years old and in a career that matters. And so when we talk, I really have to say there has to be that flutter in the heart and that speaking of the soul to answer some of these mysteries, because we make a choice, but we don't know which mystery we're going into often. Isn't that so? And don't you find that, Drew, as well?
That's right. I think we have to follow our joy and follow that sense of passion and that sense of aliveness. And hopefully we can find a vocation or an occupation or an educational journey or a life journey that can keep us close to that source of energy and that source of inspiration. And I think art is one of the ways that we bring inspiration into each other's lives. And we have to really stick close to that, because that's where a lot of wisdom is.
We have to stick close to us, but I find that we have to make the time to stick close to it, because the days go by so fast and we're interested in so many things. And we're interested now in what's happening in the political scene always and what's influencing our country and what voices make us want to be on fire about what's possible in America. And I find that when we look at people like Barack Obama, we haven't had anyone on the scene since John and Bobby Kennedy that has fired us up with the poetry of his words. He says, you know, even when he's not winning, we're on fire. And, you know, people are saying, wow, this is a different voice to respond to. And how would you look at that from your points of view?
I think that's absolutely right. I think we've gone some long decades in this country without having a real voice that was putting forth a vision of solidarity, of compassion, of justice, of we're all in this together. And I think definitely the time when Martin Luther King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968, and then 2 months and 2 days later, Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated
on
the evening of June 5th, died June 6th, 1968. We haven't had a real sense of community and vision and hope and energy in this country since that time. And I'm hoping that Barack Obama and us joining together in grassroots movements can really bring some vitality and some love and compassion and some justice and some action behind the yearning for justice into our culture.
And fertilize our imaginations and words and the power of words. And also because I have worked so much with voice in my life and trained people in voice and responded to voice, like Colin Barks, I mentioned earlier, reading the Rumi poems, and David White reading his poems. I mean, it says almost as something churns inside every cell of your body to the sound of what the human voice speaks to in the heart and the body and the belly and the legs, your arms and your brain. And it's lovely to be on fire. And I think that sometimes when we don't have it, we don't know what we're missing. And so I'm going to say that Thomas Gray said that poetry is thoughts that breathe and words that burn. And so we want to heat up the climate of America. We want to heat up our hearts. And this is joyful burning. It's not painful burning when we all come together in the fire of change. That's a big word these days. And so Drew and Barbara will tell us next how to add more poetry into your life and how you might meet up with others who gather together for the power of poetry. And you'll hear about Poets for Global Justice and much more. We'll take a short break. Do stay tuned.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment on Green 960 KKGN. Log on to joankenley.com, that's K-E-N-L-E-Y, to learn more and listen to archived shows. Invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show online or here on 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5.
Welcome back to The Joan Kenley Show. I'm Joan Kenley, and we're having a lovely conversation about poetry power with two inspiring seasoned poets, Barbara Lyon and Drew Dellinger. From the time we're children, language can have a great impact on us, whether it's our mother's tender murmurings of affection or the life-changing words given to us from a teacher, guru, or healer. We can be dramatically affected. And poetry can be revelatory, elusive, colorful, lively, dark, or disturbing. It has the power to stir our hearts and to stimulate our minds. How do you find your own inner poet? And how can all of us learn to articulate the words that come through personal experience? I mean, I know a lot of people have that yearning, and I know that there was probably 10, 15 years in my life when I decided to actually write poetry and to express myself that way, and I was actually pretty impressed with my poetry and then filed it away. And haven't dipped into it lately, and doing this show has given me some inspiration to revisit that part of me that could do that and love doing it and found great satisfaction in connecting to the poetic word. And so, Barbara, during the break, you were telling us about what a good thing it is to go find a place to find that part of yourself that can do it. Now, just what were you saying to us?
When you have a passionate response to something that's happening either within you or around you and you have no other way, write it down. How will you know what it really is until you write it down and clarify it on paper and keep clarifying it and keep finding what its jewels are, what its gifts are?
Well, that's the technicolor part of taking that step. And sometimes it's a fearful step to really start to put something on paper because there's nothing more daunting, because I've written two books about the blank piece of paper. But when you say it to me like that, Barbara, I think, of course, you just have to say, I have to capture this moment. This moment will never be in my body, in my mind, in my heart, the same way it is right now, right this minute. So do you experience that the same way, Drew?
I think that's right. Barbara's talking about capturing an emotion, capturing an experience, and I think that certainly can be fuel for writing. I also would say, if there's a phrase that you hear someone say that catches your ear, mm-hmm. jot that down. Or if you just have a little phrase, or maybe it's only one word. I remember once in my journal I wrote the word equidistant.
What a great word.
It's a great word, but at that time I didn't know if or when it would ever fit into a poem, and now it's in a poem that people have shared, you know, on several different continents, in Australia and the UK and Canada. And so sometimes it's just a humble step mm-hmm. of taking that initiative and saying, I'm going to carry around a pen and a piece of paper. The writer Anne Lamott said, if you don't carry around a pen and a piece of paper, God gives your ideas to somebody else.
That's a great quote. That's a wonderful quote. Well, also sometimes people are encouraged, aren't they, to have a pen and paper by their bedside. So if they're dreaming some words, there it is to capture it the minute you wake up, or to even capture the dream. And sometimes we dream ourselves into the right words, don't we?
I can't tell you how many times I've woken up just about to fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
This is at the beginning of the night, not at the end of the night. Just about to fall asleep, not really wanting to make that effort to turn on the light, to find the pen, to open the journal. But I've said, if I'm going to dedicate myself to this art form, I need to take that initiative, turn on the light, write down the thought, even if it seems fairly silly at the time. Sometimes a silly thought can transmogrify into a pretty decent idea.
Well, it can, and I find that these are very elusive. If we don't grab them, they're gone, because a few times I've kidded myself saying, I'll remember this in the morning, and I don't, and that's what I do about the radio shows. When I get an inspiration for a program and I have an idea at night, I'd better write it down, because it could be gone by the 8 hours that are going to pass between that idea and the next morning. And how about you?
And I know that if people are walking in nature, we know that by the poems that we read. Mm-hmm. One little leaf turning in the sun, and you're totally awed by it. It can be the jumping off place for a fabulous poem.
If you just grab that beautiful moment.
Take it and use it. Yeah. Run with it.
Yeah.
These kind of moments are swirling around us all the time, whether it's an image, a visual image, or an emotion, or an experience, or an interesting phrase or a rhyme. And I think we have to attune our antennae to the poetry that's kind of washing over us all the time.
A taste. A taste can be a wonderful poem.
Yes.
Just some wonderful taste that just explodes.
It's true. And in the spiritual tradition that I studied in for many years, the three words that the teacher said at the very beginning were to sense each day, each moment, look, really see each moment, and listen every moment. And that was a practice. And we would go around saying sensing, looking, and listening, you know, and we have to then say, oh, sensing means this to me at this moment. Looking means this kind of going forward with our eyes and letting what we see come back into our eyes, and listening in ways that we don't listen if we're not paying attention. And that was one of the greatest traditions for me to come into finding these moments you're talking about that could pass us by every day, every hour.
There's an immense overlap between spiritual practice and the practice of poetry.
Say more.
Well, poetry is about a moment of interrelatedness, of interconnectedness. And this is what most of the mystics and the great spiritual teachers have been telling us, that we are thoroughly interrelated, interpenetrated, that we participate in a living intercommunion. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the Japanese poetic tradition of the haiku,
definitely,
they talk about the haiku moment. The idea of the three lines of verse, usually it's three lines, is to capture on paper this one mystical moment of interconnection and union. And so the haiku moment is that moment of poignant connection between a perceiver and something perceived, and that dualism, that distinction between the perceiver and the perceived, breaks down for a moment, and we have this experience of oneness. And the idea of the haiku is that it's just long enough to capture that brief flashing epiphany of revelation and interconnectedness.
And it is like an epiphany when it comes. It just washes over you. And I know, Barbara, you know, we were talking about how excited you are now to be speaking to audiences, because to say your words out loud to people who are listening and enjoying you, that it's a high. Mm-hmm. It's the epiphany of the high that connects you to those who are listening, and those who are listening to you and your words. So say more about where you actually do your readings.
There's a small writing group in Fremont at the Senior Center, and I've kind of participated for a while, and then I got into it and really stayed to listen to other people read their stories, and I find that fascinating. And then when I have a chance and somebody will say, well, we need to hear your poem, and I read it, and people, there's a real response. You just feel it in the air. You feel that connection with everyone else's words and spirit and all different ages. And then at the little cafe in Niles where Charlie Chaplin started his great offerings, there's a little place called the SNA Cafe, and it was actually named after the little theater that's in memory of him. And they have an open mic, and I've been to several open mics before this, but this one really works for me because there's a respect and a listening and an enthusiasm for everyone who gets up, no matter what they offer. So consequently, the offerings are all okay.
Absolutely.
Know? Whereas in other places, they weren't always, you know, and you felt kind of, you know, you go out feeling.
There's nothing that always shuts you down more than a critical critic, right?
But they're not, you know, they accept everyone for what their heart's in it, because they're doing it just coming to be able to say their whatever or do whatever it is that they want to express to the rest of the people there. And it's delicious.
It sounds fantastic.
And it's real community and loving.
And tell us more about your Society for Global Justice.
Poets for Global Justice is a small collective of artists, and we offer poetry performances and workshops. We've performed at protests and rallies and teach-ins. We've been in the streets protesting the war. We've been out in front of Chevron World Headquarters protesting their oil profiteering off of the war. So we do some kind of in the streets, direct action, arts activism, but we also perform and offer workshops for youth and this sort of thing. And we have a website, www.poetsforglobaljustice.org.
And then how can people get your book and contact you?
I can be contacted through that website. That also will bring you to my website, which is www.drewdellinger.org.
So that's D-E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, right?
That's right, D-E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, drewdellinger.org. And you can purchase my poetry book, Love Letter to the Milky Way, on the website. And also, I have a CD that's a combination talk and poetry performance that is also available on the website. And you can join my mailing list or contact me through the website. I'd love to hear from people.
That's wonderful. And you have a telephone number, don't you, Barbara, where people can buy your book and get a hold of you? What's that number?
Call me 510-797-8971.
8971. That's really terrific. Now, where in the Bay Area would you suggest that people go to hear more poetry and gather with other poets to be inspired to write or to be inspired to listen more?
There's an amazing number of events in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is one of the world epicenters of poetry, performance poetry, and spoken word. And so there are open mics and poetry slams in Oakland, in San Francisco, and in Berkeley.
So you just Google poetry slams or poetry readings, Oakland, San Francisco, Fremont, Hayward,
and you'll
be able to find them.
I was told this today that Barnes & Noble's in Fremont was having a poetry reading. I don't know if I'll make it, but they haven't for a while, but they have in the past.
And so once again, to Google them.
Bookstores.
Bookstores, hooray. And so what I hate to say right now is that we've run out of time and that we have loved having you here. And we hope we've inspired people to open the poetry books, get a hold of your poetry, be inspired, become activists for more action around the world, for our ecosystem, for our planet, for our government, for our America and the world. And we know that we can be changed by language, we can be changed by words, and we can be changed by poetry. So there is poetry power. Thank you both so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to mention that there's an event you might all like to go to see Drew Dellinger in person with Colin Barks and Jane Hirschfield. It's going to be Sunday, February 3rd at the Herbst Theater, 6:30 to 8:30. The event is The Poetry of Gratefulness. I'd like to say to everyone tuned in, thanks so much for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you conversation radio that's co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out more about today's subject and how to reach our guests on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all our shows are archived, downloadable, and podcastable 24/7. We're also on iTunes. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible: Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, program producer Havila Capellas, and Daniel Fletcher, engineer and technical producer. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to tune into our show for more Conversation Radio every Saturday at 5 on Green 960.